And you're the director of Welcome to Refugeestan, a documentary that takes us to several refugee camps throughout the world, revealing the struggle of not only living in one of these camps, but also the logistics behind them. You take us to Jordan, Dadaab in Kenya, Norway and its training centers, to finish in Idomeni in northern Greece, where now the refugee crisis is at the doorstep of Europe. Now, when you watch that documentary, you take us not only through the travel and the journey of one refugee family, how the humanitarians are being trained, but then you take us to how the refugee family lives in a camp and why sometimes they do flee these camps because they can no longer live in them.
Yeah, that's right. The UNHCR says when you enter a camp, you will stay 17 years in this camp. So, of course, sometimes it's a very short crisis and people go back to the country, but more and more people, the crisis remains, the war, they just simply don't stop, that the people stay in these camps and are trapped there and sometimes have babies, you know, or born and raised, study there, and then nothing, you're stuck there. And that's the real problem with camps. It's really designed for emergencies. There's no structure. You don't build houses. You live in tents. You are given tents. You're given things that are not supposed to stay. That's what makes life so terrible. It's like it's not designed to stay, but it remains. That's one of the biggest problem of the camp. And the more the camps remain in time, the less money they are given, because the international community tend to move to the new crisis. So they give money to the new big crisis, the big war, the big refugee crisis. So they will give money to Syria for the moment, and they tend to forget all the other crises all over the world. And for instance, in Kenya, the money is less and less. So the situation, although you could imagine that the situation in the camp will be better, the services will be better in time, that's the contrary that happens. The services are poor, and there are less food, less education, less things that are given to these people in the camp. So that's paradoxical.
In the documentary, at some point, you explain that there's a decline in donations. Do you think that's a lack of general interest or a lack of maybe media coverage? Do you think media coverage is to blame when it comes to these cases? And if so, what's the solution to that?
The media tend to go to, like the donors, they tend to go to the new emergency and to the new crisis and tend to forget the long-term situation and long-term trouble. You know, Somalia is a very, very old crisis, an old war, and, you know, nobody pay attention anymore. So you don't have the media attention, then you don't have the donors' attention. And also there is a humanitarian fatigue, you know, that the UNHCR budget is the biggest ever. They have a huge budget at the moment, but at the same time, it covers less and less of what they need. So the discrepancy between what they need and what they are given is bigger and bigger every year, although the money is there and they are given more and more money. So there is really a humanitarian fatigue and the sense that states, you know, where to put the money because there are so many crises. But I think, yeah, it's really important to keep covering the old crisis and to go back to places where we as journalists went 10 years, 15 years, 20 years ago, and you will find that there are still camps and there are still people there living there. You know, when we film in the camp in Tanzania, when we cover the Burundi crisis, the beginning of the documentary, we follow refugees who are just arriving in this camp and the UNHCR are building tents for them. But the camp where they are arriving, it's a very old camp. And although there were 80,000 people arriving, Burundis people arriving in this camp, there were 50,000 Congolese who were living there for 20 years. Totally forgotten by everybody, just waiting for a visa to the United States, maybe in 5 years, 10 years. People are totally forgotten, and we totally forgot that we cover all these crises, and you know, in the past, and you go to the next crisis, so you forgot about these people too.
The way you narrate your documentary makes us feel as if we are a refugee, or at least if we were trying to put ourselves in the shoes of one. Why did you choose to do it that way?
There are so many things on refugee that I found that so many documentary film that I have to find a new way to create the narration and to create a link between what people experience in refugee camps and what you would experience if you were there. But I think also it's to remind people that it's quite in the long history, in the big picture, it's quite new in Europe, that it's not so long in our history that we had camps in Europe, you know, and UNHCR was created in 1951. It was not supposed to remain this agency. It was created to deal with the refugee crisis after the Second World War and then to be closed. It was a very tiny agency at the time. It was supposed to deal with the people in the camps, in the very, very many camps in Europe after the Second World War. we always have this feeling that being a refugee is something, it's very far from us, very, very far in distance, in usually in African country or third world country, and cannot happen in Europe. And also far from us in time, that, you know, it's not going to happen. And it's not that far. I mean, Second World War was the biggest refugee crisis ever. And even now, what we experience with the so-called refugee crisis is nothing compared to what we experience in Europe among European people after the war. So it's not that far, and it can happen to all of us at some point. I mean, we could all be a refugee at some point. So I think that was a way to just invite people to, you know, reflect a little bit about our history and try to find a way to relate to these people, because they are not that far.
Now, you've been to Idomeni, and I want to point this one out because it seems that now European countries are paying more attention because, well, it's on their doorstep and they don't know what to do. When you see the media on the ground, they have responsibilities towards their own editors. They have responsibilities towards their own government as well. How are they reporting on the ground the situation in Greece right now?
In Idomeni, I had an interesting conversation with editor in Paris who told me, oh, you went there and you cover also situation elsewhere in Africa. So tell me, is it that bad? Because I have discussion with my staff on the ground and they're describing terrible thing like you could see in Africa or you could see, you know, in war zone, and I'm just concerned that they are not exaggerating the thing, and maybe they're junior, maybe they, you know, they cannot compare. And I found that interesting because they didn't exaggerate it. What was going on in Idomeni is a real nightmare. It's really what you see on the war zone or in developing world where the refugee crisis usually happen and where the camps are usually created. So on the media coverage, I think there were like a kind of like, is it really happening here? Kind of attitude that I found interesting. But it's interesting also that I think it's 60 or 70% of the camps and the refugees lives in only 10 countries in the world, and all of them are in developing world. And that's interesting because that shows that we don't get what it is to really have refugees in the country, to be a host country. Lebanon is right now, one of four people living in Lebanon is a refugee. So this is nothing to do with what we are living. It's very tiny what we are living. The people arriving here is really nothing compared to what Kenya have been experiencing, or what Thailand lived, or what Pakistan lived, you know, where they have massive influx of people, massive refugee camp, massive people that you have to deal with and to create camp for them or either integrate. So it's really interesting that now we are trying to understand. Ah, this is what it is to, you know, have these camps and people arrive in crisis.
People are becoming more aware of the plight of a refugee, and it seems that they also do understand that living in a camp isn't the solution, and how to move away from these camps, especially since 58% of refugees worldwide live in cities. So what would be the best solution?
It's very complex because it's quite new that the UNHCR acknowledged that camps is a bad thing, that it doesn't work, that it creates side effects, and it's not the best option. But because for a very, very long time, it was like the main best thing to do. You know, you create a camp, you deal with the people, you know where they are, you know how many there are, what they need and everything. So that's quite new that they acknowledge that it's a bad thing, you know, and that living in a camp is a terrible thing to experience. So they have this new doctrine, which is alternative to camp, and usually it's living in a city and being integrated. And I think it's really, really important that people are not in a closed environment, because the problem with camp, it's not the camp itself, it's the fact that they are closed environment. It's sometimes quite similar to a jail, because it's very difficult to get out, you don't have the right to work outside. So there's no way you're going to integrate at some point, even though it takes time to integrate. It's a challenge, it's difficult. It's difficult for the host community, it's very costly and everything, but at least it's doable. There is a hope. Whereas when you put people in a camp, and if you deprive them of the right of getting out and being able to work and to find a way to sustain and find a way of living, and you don't have any link to the host community, then you're trapped, and there's no way. You just wait until the crisis in your country ends, and most of the time it doesn't happen. People don't go back. So yes, opting the camp is something really, really important. And trying to integrate them in the host community seems to be the best option, yeah.
Thank you very much, Anne-Poirée, for this interview.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll be looking forward to watching your documentary, which will be broadcast on Arte on the 21st of June, and which will be available online in both English and French.